Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
To you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188. Our guest today is Byron Dale. He'll be with us shortly. Byron is an expert on money, recognized in four states as a expert witness on the subject of money. We're going to talk about money today and see what Byron can help us understand. I've known Byron for years and look forward to it. Should be fun, should be entertaining, and should be informative. First, we'll do the market report. Gold is down $4.30 to $1,281.50. Silver is up 5 cents to $19.90 per ounce. Platinum is up $9 to $1,432. Palladium is up $4 to $784. Dow Jones is up 57 points to 16,515. NASDAQ is up 58 points to 4,256. New York Stock Exchange is, 45 points up to 10,572. U.S. dollar index is off 0.02 to 80.08. Crude oil is down $2.05 to $99.53 per barrel. A friend of mine back in the 1990s, he had a degree in political science, and he used to go to 7-Elevens and convenience stores during lunch hour where the clerks were busy. And he'd get himself a hot dog and a Coke, a Slurpee, whatever. And he would pay the clerk at the 7-Eleven with a $6 bill. Now, at the time, this is back when Bill Clinton was in office, these $6 bills had a picture of Bill Clinton on the front and Monica Lewinsky on the back, and a number six up in the four corners of the dollar bill, and some jokes on the dollar, on this joke dollar bill. There would be some jokes on it. You understand? But nevertheless, he was able to successfully pass half a dozen of these $6 bills to unsuspecting 7-Eleven clerks. And the clerks were busy, and all they did was see the six, and they looked in the cash register to see if there was space to, if there's a slot for the $1 bills and a slot for the five and the tens and the twenties and so on. And they'd look, and there wasn't a slot for the $6 bill. So they'd lift up the drawer, and they'd slide it under the drawer where they put the hundreds and perhaps the 50s. Well, It wasn't a fair test because these clerks were often immigrants and they were busy and they didn't have time and they didn't want to make a fuss and they're trying to do a good job. But he illustrated a point. And you can laugh about these foreign immigrants were taken advantage of. Some people smirk about that. But the truth of the matter is, most people don't understand much more than those immigrants. The only thing most of us understand about money is how to count it. We know that the 5 is better than the 1 and the 10 is better than the 5 and so on. But other than that, we don't understand that nature. We don't understand what money is all about. Our guest today is Byron Dale. And Byron, met Byron, he came down to speak at our Citizens for Legal Reform meetings in Dallas a couple of times, at least once, and I think a couple of times in the 1990s. So it's probably 15 years or so since Byron and I have met face-to-face, but we're going to talk to Byron Dale today on the program. Byron, are you there?
I sure am.
Let me give him a little bit more of your background. Byron is a certified monetary expert. 30 years of research, study, and communication on the monetary system and its effect on people. He's presided over 800 lectures on the subject of money. He's been qualified in several courts as a monetary expert, North Dakota, Minnesota, Illinois, and Missouri. He's been a guest on a number of radio and TV programs, as he is here today. So he's been at this. This isn't something where Byron just started looking at money in the last 6 months or a year. He's been at this for 30 years. So, Byron, what got you started? What made you start looking at money?
That's a very good question. To tell you the truth, it kind of started one summer when the price of cattle was going up like crazy, and I kept asking, well, why in the world are the prices going up? Everybody said there was a shortage of cattle. So it went up to a peak, and then it dropped off faster than it went up, and I kept asking everybody, why is it going down so fast? And they said, well, there's such a surplus of cattle. I raise cattle, and I know you can't go from a shortage to surplus in less than 3 months. I guarantee it's physically impossible. So I knew that obviously somebody was lying to me. And then one year we had quite a profit over a three-year period. But I ended up deeper in debt than I was when I started. And I said, now, how in the world can you make a profit for 3 years running, pretty good one, and end up deeper in debt when you was when you started? And so then I began to wonder, well, now, just how does this work anyway, all this stuff? Because I own a rancher. I produce wealth all the time. Every spring, the grass grows and rains normally and sun shines. And they get out and eat the grass, and they do grow, and they reproduce and everything, and that's producing real wealth just from the ground and the natural resources and natural reproduction. But yet I had to constantly go to the bank and get a line of credit, and almost everybody else I knew did too. But the banker never seemed to produce anything at all, any wealth of any kind, not anything, but he never ran out of money to loan. So I got curious and I started studying that. And I went to a management meeting in Denver, Colorado, back in the early in the 80s, when the interest was going up there around 22%. And while we was there, we were studying financial records of farmers, and most of them were way bigger than I was, farmers and ranchers. And they was actual books kept by the farmer and the rancher and this business firm. And as I began to look through them, I said, well, man, all these guys are getting a little bit deeper in debt all the time. Now, some get more assets than the other, but they're all getting deeper in debt. So I asked the speaker, I said, well, just where does money come from? And he said, well, it's just funny money. They just print it. I said, well, that makes sense to me, but if that's true, where does the money come from to pay the interest we print? And who gets the interest off the printing press? And the speaker said, well, nobody does. I said, well, that can't be true, because if we all are borrowing it and we're all paying interest on that borrowed money, and if what you just said is true, they just run it off the printing press, then somebody's got to be getting the profit off the interest income off the print press. Who is that? And he got beet red and began to sweat and looked around the room and pointed to somebody clear across the room and said, what was it that you wanted? And just like that, I disappeared. And that's when I started studying money. And the next spring, what?
I said, I understand. It's an astonishing study. As I, you know, I was trying to point out at the beginning, no one understands what's going on with money except the elite and bankers, a relative handful. What percentage of the people in this country do you suppose?
Oh, hardly any. Most bankers don't either.
Well, down at our level.
I guarantee you, most bankers don't either.
Yeah, down at our level.
At the lower level, at least.
Yeah, they understand that payday is on the 1st and the 15th, and after that, the rest of it is optional. But what percentage of people in this country do you think really has an adequate, not a complete, but an adequate understanding of money, what it is, how it's made, how you can be ensnared by it? 1%, 5%, fraction of a percent? What do you think?
Oh, a fraction percent. I'd be willing to say that there's probably less than 1,000 of them in the whole in the United States.
Who really understand how money
works. Who really understand how money works and the consequences of it and what we should do about it.
And yet we are all caught in this where we use money every day and perhaps
Absolutely.
To our disadvantage, and almost none of us understand how this works.
Well, most of them never even thought about it.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, you told that joke, you know, at the front
there.
It's a true story.
It's not a joke, actually.
That is a true story.
On one level, but it's a true story.
Well, anyway, to back off of that and go right off with that, I've went to a lot of stores and places, and I'm going to give you an example of this thing because this is really interesting. You probably met Dan Pilla Sr. sometime in your life.
Yeah, it's been a long time, and I believe he's passed on. Is that true?
No, he hadn't. I just talked to him a couple days ago, last Saturday. He's still alive. He's in his 80s.
Okay.
Still going strong, good health. But anyway, we was coming back from a meeting in Iowa, and we stopped. It was a cold night, and he filled up the car, and he filled it up, and I went in to pay for it. And it was cold. I took a little bit to get warm, and then I went over to the cash reader and said, I meant to come to you first, but I was cold. I kind of forgot it warming up. But will you take Federal Reserve notes for payment?
Hmm.
And she said, I don't know. What are they? And I said, well, they're a non-redeemable note on a private bank. Oh, I don't think we'd do that. But I'll call my boss, and it is about 2:30 in the morning. Before I could stop her, she did. And she called up, and the woman answered immediately. I was surprised. And she said, I've got a customer here and wants to know if we will take payment in Federal Reserve notes. And she says, what the heck are those? And I could hear both sides of the conversation. And she turned to me, what did you say they were again? And I said, they're a non-redeemable note on a private bank. And the woman on the other end phone heard that. She said, we ain't taking that, no way. So she hung up right then, and so the clerk turned to me and she said, I don't know what to say. And I said, well, I don't either, because that's all I've got. Well, she says, can I see one? What do they look like? So I handed one, and she got mad for a second, and then she realized there must be something more to this. So then we got into quite a discussion about money and all this stuff. And when they got all through, she admitted she had just got out of college with a degree in economics and did not even know what a Federal Reserve note was.
It's pretty amazing because it's more evidence of the same idea I was talking about at the beginning of the program. Person looks at the only thing most of us see is the number in the upper right-hand corner or the left-hand corner. It says 1, 5, 10, 50, 100. We get that. Other than that, we don't even know that it's a Federal Reserve note. It says so on the piece of paper. We haven't read it. It's foreign to us, completely foreign. You'd think it had been written in Sanskrit or something like that. No, it's right there, and nobody knows it. All we see are the numbers. What do we need
see? And that's right, because actually all we use for money is numbers.
Yeah.
Because actually those Federal Reserve notes aren't legal notes anymore. They're not a monetary note. Because to be a legal monetary note, you have to have the word to pay the bearer written on the face of it. And they're not. There's no. They used to be. I have bills. In fact, I have a set of bills that goes all the way from when they first started printing them, clear down to where they now, and you know, the whole series of how they changed, you know, first they had gold and silver coins, and then they had silver and gold certificates, and then they had banknotes, and they started out with payable in gold, and then they ended up payable, and then the next time they changed it, it was payable and lawful money, but nobody defined what that was. Then they made said the same thing the next bunch, but they made it three lines instead of four, and then the next line, it took off the three and said, just notice legal tender for all debt, public and private, and they took off the promise to pay. Well, see, they can't be a legal financial note. And as far as I know, there's only two kinds of note. There's like, hi, Alfred, how are you? And there's the one that we, you know, we do deal with financially. It's a promise to pay. That's what a note is.
But they don't ever pay, so it's not really, there's no promise there.
Well, yeah, they don't. In fact, I sued the Federal Reserve Bank of Minneapolis on payment on their notes, and I sent them down first a $20 note with the promise to pay on it, and they just sent it back and didn't even write a letter or anything. But they did call me and said, I just don't understand what this is all about. I said, well, this is just demand payment on your notes. I've got your note, and it says to pay to the bearer on demand in dollars, and I got the note. I'm the bearer. I'm sending it to you, the issuer, and I want paid in dollars. Now, I don't know what a dollar is, so whenever you send me, please conclude the statutory definition of the word dollar so that I can indeed know that I got the right stuff. I don't want to have to argue with you afterwards. And he said, I can't handle this. Would you like to talk to a lawyer? And I said, well, yeah, I would. You give me a number. He said, well, I'll just connect you right quick. So he did, and of course, she hadn't read any of the information, so it took me a while to explain it to her. And then all of a sudden, she got it, and she squealed, just screamed. And then, just like somebody stuck her with a knife or something, and then, bang, down went the phone. So then I thought, well, we have to do something here to make them do. So my friend had a $500 gold note, and I said, well, let's send that in. And oh, he said, I don't want to lose that.
Yeah,
and I said, you won't lose it. They'll send it back. But this time we'll write a letter. And we did the first time about the same one, only now we upped the ante, you know, to $500. And this said we're payable in gold. So this time they wrote back and said, well, we used to use gold, but we don't anymore, and we don't have to. And that was it. So we thought it about a while, so then we sued them in small claim court. Because it didn't cost too much, because I knew I wouldn't win. I just wanted to see what would. I just wanted to see what I'd learn. And so we went over to the courthouse, and I filed the case. And she says, "Well, you can't sue them. They're an agency of the government. You can't sue them." And I said, "Well, I don't think so. I think they're just a private business. I know they pay taxes downtown Minneapolis to the county. I think like something $4 million a year for you know taxes on their property." But I'll tell you what, I don't want to stand here and argue with you. You won't think one thing and I think another, so why don't I just file it and pay you the filing fee, and then here's my address and my phone number and everything, and if they send it back and say they're a government agency and I can't sue them, I'll just give me a call and I'll run right over and pick them up and get my money back and apologize to you for taking your time. But I don't think that'll happen. So she agreed, and of course, within a week, we had a hearing scheduled and everything. We went down there, and Federal Reserve turned up with their attorney and everything. And so we went in there, and the judge held us over for about the last one, and then he said, looked at it, and he said, I don't really understand this. What's this all about? And I said, well, I got a promise to pay from this outfit, and they refused to pay, and we're just coming to court just like you would any other business and get you to issue a judgment so we can get paid.
I'll tell you what, Byron, we're going to break for some commercial announcements. We'll come back and find out what happened when the judge was faced with the possibility that he'd have to make a judgment on this. I'm Alfred Addis, here on Financial Survival. We'll be back with Byron Dale in just a moment. Please stay tuned.
have a heart condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option, you need our emergency heart attack kit. 5 concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. Easy to use and portable in a 1-pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at www.thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis, here in Financial Survival. Our guest is Byron Dale. We'll get to Byron in just a moment. I want to remind you that Greg Hunter from USAWatchdog.com will be our guest tomorrow, and much of the program will be spent on Greg's insights relative to the G20 group and current meetings or recent meetings. I also want to remind you that if you'd like to buy Silver Eagles, you can get them from Melody for $2.75 over spot. All right, whatever the spot price, if the spot price of silver is $20, Silver Eagle costs you $2.75. If you order over 500 at a time, shipping is free. $2.75 over spot per Silver Eagle. Good deal. Call Melody at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. When we broke for the commercial announcements, Byron was talking about he was there at a court, small claims court, suing the Federal Reserve of Minneapolis, if I understand correctly. You can correct me there if I'm wrong. And we're at the point when the court was faced with a need to make a judgment. What happened, Byron?
Well, the judge didn't know what to do, so he looked over to the lawyer and said, well, what have you got to say? And he said everything he said is true. Except they made the bill legal tender, therefore they don't have to, they are payment. And I said, well, that can't be. And so we went on a little bit, and then I wanted to know what a dollar is. And the judge said, well,
now,
you
wait
think
a second.
A dollar
Let me just clarify that for a second. What they're talking about is they're claiming that because the bill is legal tender, if you walk in with a $20 bill and you would like to receive payment on it, they will say, sure, we'd be glad to give you payment, and you give them the $20, and they give you a different paper $20 bill. Is that true?
Well, Yeah, that's what they would do, or what they say. Well, they told me that you could go down to the store anytime if you want to redeem them. You just go down, and they'd take it, and you'd get anything you want for $20. And I said, well, that's true, but they aren't the issuer. The bill right on his face says it'll pay me dollars on demand.
Yep.
And I'm just here to demand the dollars. And to tell you the truth, neither the lawyer nor the judge knew had a clue what to do. So then the judge finally asked me, well, what do you think a dollar is? And I said, well, I honestly don't know. The only place I've ever seen it written is the 1790 Coinage Act, where it says 371 and a quarter pure silver or 416 grains of standard silver is a dollar. But they say that law has been done away with or appealed or amended or something. But I have looked for, well, at least 25 years now, trying to find where that was ever done, and never can find out where it was repealed or anything else. And I didn't know laws died of old age, but whatever. And so I said, I have, I think, five things here that all claim the dollars, but they obviously can't all be because they're all different things. I've got a Federal Reserve note. I got a United States note. I got a silver dollar. I got an Eisenhower copper nickel dollar. I have a Satchewia dollar and Anthony.
Susan B. Anthony.
Susan B. Anthony bill or coin.
Yeah.
And they all claim their dollars, but they're all based on different principles, different substances, different weights. So anyway, it can't. And of course, any law that's confusing, the average person can't understand. It's not enforceable law anyway, according to the court cases I've read. And so he didn't know what to do. And then the lawyer, we turned to the lawyer again, and she said, well, this should be in federal court. And because this court really has no jurisdiction. And I said, well, I don't think that's true. I know for a fact the Minneapolis Federal Reserve pays, I think it's around $4 million in taxes to Hennepin County. And I can't believe anybody would pay taxes to anybody that had absolutely no jurisdiction over them. So then they didn't know where to go. So anyway, then that was kind of it. I mean, it didn't go much further. And I ended up in saying, well, you know, Judge, really what I'm wanting to know is, with this debt growing like it is all the time and constantly growing, I was just wondering what our final payment really was. But, you know, you really can't pay by just shuffling IOUs around. Someplace there has to be a final payment. And he didn't know what to do, and so that was the end of it. Case was over. And so then the next day or two, maybe 2 days later, three, it was the quickest I ever got returned, I got a letter from the court that it had been dismissed with prejudice. I could never file another suit like that. Well, I didn't want to do it anyway, so I just appealed it up into the district court. And they set a hearing date and everything and, you know, schedule for discovery and everything to be in, and of course then she immediately moved it into federal court. And it got into federal court, then they said, well, I couldn't sue the government. And so the Federal Reserve wrote in and said that a brief that said that we're not government. And I wrote in a brief that they aren't government. So now the plaintiff and the defendant, they're both in totally agreement. The Federal Reserve System is, you know, the Federal Reserve Bank of Minneapolis is not a government agency. It's a private-owned entity. And the judge went on, I don't remember exactly what their ruling was, but basically I lost. So then I took it up to the 8th Court of Appeals. And this time it was really interesting because the ruling came out that they dismissed my case because I'd filed a claim for which no relief was available.
Mm-hmm. 12B6
so
motion.
Obviously there is no such thing as a dollar to pay anybody. And that's where it stopped. I was thinking about taking up the Supreme Court, but you can't even send Federal Reserve notes in to pay for a Supreme Court, you know, to get it docketed. You have to write a check.
Well, I'll tell you what. Listen, we've got someone who'd like to talk to you.
Sure.
At least he was on the line. Is Jim still there from West Virginia?
I'm here.
All right, Jim. What you got for us?
I got four banking stories for you. Some good, some not so good.
Well, why don't you give us questions for Byron, or at least something that's consistent with what the guest is talking about?
Oh, this is totally consistent.
All right, shoot.
Totally consistent. Okay, my parents told me in 65 when I was 14 years old what it was all about. And my dad at that time said to keep my mouth shut. He knew a man who in the late 50s got burned on Wall Street, and he threatened this particular organization with exposure to all the print broadcast media all across the United States. Exposed a whole scam before I was dead. So I kept my mouth shut. But anyway, until a little later, mid-80s, talked to a nice lady. She played organ. And I repaired organs at Chichester Church. And I talked to me about Federal Reserve notes and fractional reserve banking. And she got real steely-eyed. She says, "What is your full name?" I gave it to her. She said, "Well, the FBI is going to find out about you. Because there's a federal law that if you start a run on a bank, you get to cool your heels in jail, young man." And she, I mean, just mad as can be. Early 90s. The gal I went to school with was a loan officer at the bank, and so I told her about this stuff and told her, you know, be careful with this information. They fired her. She couldn't get a job with another bank, even when she changed states. PhD in economics. I went to school with him, high school, and decided, you know, PhD in economics. Late 90s, Federal Reserve Private Organization, blah, blah. He argued with me. Did I argue with him? No, he was a PhD. So the history of this, going back forever, is amazing, and thank God we can talk about it. And I love what the stand's telling us. I'll shut up.
All right, Jim, thank you. Appreciate your comment. I think the lesson in all of this, at least for the moment, Byron, is that you're talking to a judge at a number of judges in the case you described from, I believe, in the 1990s or 1980s?
It was in about five or six years ago. I don't have it right in front of me right now. Actually, I got a book that's all in there, the whole thing. I took it as soon as I got home after the first trial. I wrote down everything that was said, and it was a little more probably accurate than what I said today. Because it's been 5 or 6 years. I could go look in the book. I don't have time on this program to take time.
I think
the point here
is that even you would suppose, the average person would suppose, well, you and I don't understand money. Okay, my average person might be thinking, talking to a friend, we don't necessarily understand the money, but the judges understand. They've got to understand. And yet your experience is that even the judges don't understand.
Oh, no, the judges don't. I could tell you lots of stories. I'm going to tell you a couple right quick. I was in bankruptcy court. Let me give you one other thing here to start with, because I don't believe a fellow should keep his mouth shut. When I understood this, I started to say so, and I did some things that I made a lot of press. I have, back in the 80s, I've been on the phone 12 hours a day and never made a phone call talking to different people. That's how many reporters I'd have call me in a day, and I did that several different times, not every day, but a lot of days. And then it finally, I made a lot of press. It went nationwide. I had a TV crew fly in all the way from Chicago to my ranch out in Timberlake, which is just about in the middle of no places you can get. And they had to fly out to Bismarck, North Dakota, and then rent cars and come down 110 miles to the ranch. And so, I mean, we
got
to
have to ride horses for the last 20 miles or anything like that?
No, we had cars.
All right, it wasn't that remote. They still, you could get there with a car. All right, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, you could still get there with a car. This was in the 80s, 80, 82, I think. And so, anyway, then they was going to go to court the next day, but they got all picked up and held up to where by the law officers. They couldn't do it. And then finally, we got in court, and we got them into a poker game, the judge and the lawyer and myself. And I had the tales from the Treasury that I have an actual – one of the things I did was write to the Treasury and ask them how this money worked, and they wrote that the actual creation of money always involves the extension of credit from private commercial banks. And I asked, well, where does the interest come from? And they wrote back and said that, well, that comes from the same source the other money comes. In other words, somebody's got to borrow that, you or somebody else. And so we got into this with the judge, and so I read that, and I said, now I'll be the banker, and you guys can be the, you know, other people. And we're going to have a poker game, and I'll loan 10 people 10 chips, and we can all play a good game of poker, and 10 people can. And the judge and the lawyer both agreed that would be true. And I said, now, of course, you know, they charge interest on this, you know, so I'll charge interest. Now, before they can leave, they've all got to give me 11 chips back, and all of a sudden it hit them. And then I said, of course, that's impossible, and the law says that any contract that's unlawful, repugnant to the nature of which a contract was created, or impossible to perform, is a null and void contract. And I just proved that the contract, we was arguing about some a debt that I owed, supposedly owed PC. I tried to pay it, but they refused to take what I wanted to give them, which was a lawful note that they could have actually used to get as reserves to get, I mean, as collateral to get Federal Reserve notes printed. And when Federal Reserve notes are printed, the banks do have to put up collateral. And that's all in the letters from the Treasury I got. Anybody can get them books by going to wealthmoney.org, wealthmoney.org, and they can get the book. Well, they can see all the books there. And anyway, so then the lawyer just turned white as a sheet. I mean, he was whiter than a piece of paper. And the judge, he was just red as a beet, just like all the blood had run out of the lawyer and crossed under the floor and up into the judge's face. It was just unbelievable. So then they had quit. They had hearings without notifying me. And then the governor got in it. And 2 years ago, a guy called me and had talked to him just before he passed away. And my name and money come up, and he just got all upset and waved his arms and said, yeah, that son of a gun wouldn't shut up. So I had to send people up there to shut him up. And they did. They sent 42 cops out to my house, and two of them come in, and we were sitting there on the kitchen table talking. And all of a sudden, one of them grabbed a 32-ounce ketchup bottle, plumb full of ketchup, and hit me over the head, knocked me up and out of my chair and against the wall. And next thing I knew, we was out in the porch, and he had his chest over my back, and he was trying to throw me off my feet. And why I was still on my feet, I don't know, but I did. And I looked up, and the only thing I could see his crotch was, so I grabbed a big handful, and he turned loose. Went over the corner a little bit, and as I turned around to kind of see him go, then the other guy, a great big guy weighing about 240 pounds, he come through the door and hit me, and down we went, and I couldn't get away. So then the other one come up, and he just started beating on my, he jumped on me, and I kicked him off a couple of times, and then he come around the other side where I couldn't get him and beat me on the side of the face. And so when they finally got me to a hospital, and I was so beat up and so swollen that both my mother and my wife said they wouldn't have recognized me if they wouldn't have knew that it was me when they came into the hospital. But I still ain't shut up.
Now, the point,
you know, it's time we do something besides cower down and take this bullshit.
The point is that this is important information, point one. Very few people understand this information, point two. And the government doesn't want any of us to understand this information. So let's suppose we do understand this information. Is it a danger to us, Byron? Are we likely to get beat up by the police the way you were? Or is this the sort of thing that we can use in a way that is to our benefit? Not just financial, but perhaps even political benefit. Go ahead.
Well, you can use this information any way you want. The only thing they'll object to is if you start making nationwide press with it, then they'll get excited.
All right.
But if people like, there's an outfit going to take American Spring, I think it's called, down. They're going to try to get several million down to people down to Washington and demand changes, but they don't want to address the money. So they're not going to get anything accomplished, because if you don't get control of the money, you're never going to get control of our government, the Constitution, or anything else.
You're telling us that the money is the key to what really happens in this country relative to our government, and arguably even in the world.
Oh, absolutely. They control it all. There's no question about
it. So who is really in charge? Is the Federal Reserve in charge, or is the government, the federal government, in charge? Which one is in charge? Are they working in tandem, or one is superior to the other?
Well, the banks are way superior to the federal government, because the federal government is a servants to them, because they got to borrow the money from them in order to keep operating. Otherwise, they couldn't operate.
Right.
And most of your congressmen are bought off. They won't touch it with a 10-foot bowl.
Well,
they
let's break. We're going to break for some more commercial announcements, and we will talk more about the Congress and government and their relationship to the Federal Reserve when we return to the Financial Survival in just a moment. Please stay tuned. We'll be right back.
countries have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a KU band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click Satellite System.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here on Financial Survival with our guest, Byron Dale. I want to remind you again, tomorrow's guest is Greg Hunter from USAWatchdog.com. Melody is having a special on Silver Eagles, and you can buy them for $2.75 over the spot price of silver. Silver is selling for $20. It'll cost you $22.75 for Silver Eagle. Shipping is additional. If you order 500 or more Silver Eagles, shipping is free. Give Melody a call, 1-800-375-4188. When we broke, Byron was talking about the kind of corruption, first off, that the banks essentially run the government. You had touched on the idea that congressmen are corrupt, and you go ahead and run with that wherever you want to go, Byron.
Well, it's so obvious because, see, and I talked to a legislator one time, and I explained this money to him, and he got all panicky. Oh, we can't even talk about that. I mean, if we lose our faith in it, the only thing that keeps it together is confidence in the faith in it. If we shake that a little bit, the whole thing's liable to just come tumbling down.
And then that's the Achilles heel of this system.
Yes, and that's what they're all afraid of because they don't know what to do.
And
that's what every reporter used to ask me.
If people understood the nature of money, if they really understood how it worked, it would be difficult to maintain faith in the system that exists right now. Is that true?
Well, absolutely, if they had any balls to do anything about it. That's a big next thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And every reporter that I ever talked to, always the final thing when he didn't know where else to go, because I could answer more questions than I'd ever run into anybody, so they didn't kind of run out of where to go. So the next thing, like the last thing that must have always worked, they said, okay, how would you do it different? So I'd lay out exactly how I'd do it different, and man, the phone would go dead. Because they're so afraid, and they don't know what to do because they don't know if they ever change it, how far they'd have to go back to try to make things right, and all the corruption, all the farms and homes that's been stolen, and all this kind of stuff. And you understand that they control the markets. They, you know, all they got to do is make a few phone calls, and the cow market goes up or down, and that's what started it. You know, because there's obviously no reason that cattle would run up $6, $8, $10, $120, $100. I think actually they went up in a short time, and then went clear down. They went up to over a dollar, and then they fell down to 25 cents. Now, there's no way that supply and demand has anything to do with anything like that. That's totally controlled. I sat in the sale barn one day and saw three cow buyers. Each one independently went up and got a phone call, went up the phone, and when they come back, cow dropped $2 a hundred. Because they told them they would just totally didn't want to pay that much more that day. So, and you see it all the time if you just pay attention. And congressmen, they don't want to do anything. It's got a good life. They kiss babies and wave hands and beg for money all the time. And they're not interested in serving the people at all. And yep. I've talked to him. One guy actually told me, well, Byron, if you had 1,000 people out in the parking lot that were after you and supporting you and raiding thunder, I'd probably listen to you. But there's only you and another guy here. I ain't paying any attention to you. That's too much risk to fool around with that for me.
Yep.
Another congressman.
Well, at least you got an honest answer out of the guy.
Yeah,
sometimes
another
congressman. That's an achievement all by itself. Who benefits from this system, Byron? Who's losing and who's winning?
The banks and the corporations that grow up around them, the businesses and stuff, because once you get into this, you'll find out, like Target, it owns its own bank. J.J. Johnson owns its own bank, and those are ones that I know personally about. The others, I'm sure they do too. Any smart businessman would soon, you know, that big a corporation would soon get in at banking ties, because when you can create your own money to run your business, and you might have to trade with your neighbor a little bit to make it look, keep it on the whole, up and up. But if you can create all your own money for all your own investments, well, you can't lose.
And so who does lose? We can't have a win-win situation going on here. Who's winning and who's losing, and how much are they losing?
Well, the people are losing everything, right? Their ownership, their property. In fact, the whole country used to be full of farmers, and now there's just a few. Where I actually grew up, you know, actually where I, not grew up, but where I had the ranch, I had a friend that fell on his farm. He just rents it now because, you know, we're not as young as we used to be. But at the time in the 80s, And especially in the time of the 60s when I started high school, we went to a private high school together. And all them kids that went there came off farm kids. And now, a couple of years ago, I was in him, we drove around. And all those places, a long time ago, he showed me where all them kids lived. And then, now, all that whole area is owned by just a few big farmers that run between a 50 and 100,000 acre farms. I drove to Nebraska the next day to visit another friend, and he showed me and told me the same thing happened. An old neighbor come over, and we sat and visited. Same thing happened there. Used to be all farmers on that land, you know, from 600 to 1,000, you know, acres or so. And now they're all down, and they're mostly big 100,000 acre farms. And, you know, it's just all gone that way. Big business has all gone that way. The people are just slaves that work for sub-salaries. And the congressmen, they don't pay any attention to us because they know. I had a legislator tell me, well, Byron, this would be awful hard to do anything about because most all of the people who run for office get the most of their money from the bankers and their buddies, you know, the big businesses. We have a congressman here in Minnesota that never did a thing in his life, but once he got to a legislator for in the legislation for Minnesota, all of a sudden he got a big job with Target on the side, too.
Mm-hmm.
That's just like having your own lobbyist right in there, because he's not a lobbyist. He's in there. He can vote, too.
Can the American people restore some semblance of freedom and liberty without first legitimate monetary reform?
No,
can we be free with
impossible.
The money system we have right now, or is it certain that we're just headed for trouble?
Well, you're just going to say what you're really going to see is just a slowly lower standing of living, like we've seen since in the last 25, 30 years. Just a constant slow lowering the standard of living for more and more people. That's
cooking
what you're
frogs.
Going to see, just more of it.
Cooking frogs.
It's not going to crash.
We're just dropping it down. It's moving a little bit, and it's not enough to complain about on any given day, month, or year, and yet it just keeps on grinding away, and you look back and you think, what happened? Where did we go wrong?
Yeah, and you see it now. I mean, especially out in this country, and even others. Any place you go, all the towns that used to be viable in the 50s and 60s are all out of business. If there's anything there, they're just curio shops, you know, little shops where crafts and stuff are sold, and that's about it. You might find a grocery store and something like a bar. You find some bars in them. That's about it. They're just a fraction of what they used to be. And this is all because of the bankers have taken the farmers all out and given the land to few. The same thing, most of the business. When I was a kid, all the stores had, everybody had their own little business, and they weren't some, you know, of just part of a, another thing. And each town went, you know, you had different type shops and different things. Now every store you go, every city you go in, all the same exact stores.
Yeah.
And all, you know, off, you know, associated with some chain or something like that. It don't make a difference whether, you know, whether
it's McDonald's
or whatever it is.
Seize just about any place you want to go.
That's right, and that's what you'll see more of. And then slowly they'll probably trim down the population one way or another. Global warming,
we'll
that bullshit
down
has
ourselves
to happen.
If we're put under enough stress, people will go crazy and start shooting each other.
Well, they kind of already are, it seems to me like. And
let me ask
they
you
do all... Go ahead.
You're describing a financial problem, the monetary problem that we have in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Is this same monetary problem seen in some other foreign countries? Is it seen in virtually all other foreign countries? Is it the foundation for the New World Order?
Well, it's seen in all the nations, and the only ones aren't, it's called enemies of, you know, of I can't think of the exact words, Bush, but, you know, the...
Evil access, or evil, the access of
there
evil.
There you go. Yeah, there you go. And you see it. I have some friends that came from Bosnia, and, you know, that was a nice country to live in, and then all of a sudden, you know, they started to fight with each other, and first thing you know, they drove a lot of them out. And now the first thing they got after that was a central bank. And I have a friend that has a Somali friend. He said that was a great place to live. And then all of a sudden it filled up with guns and they all started shooting each other. And then he said, my friend said, now you got a central bank, don't you? He said, yes, how do you know? Because that's what they're doing. Any countries that don't have it, well, we're going to have war in there one way or the other. And when they get through, they'll have a central bank. And all the rest of them, they do have central banks. And they just control them tighter and tighter, and they keep loaning them more money, and of course they can't pay, because once our money is all created as an interest-bearing debt, one way or the other, and then the interest comes in, the interest makes the debt grow, but not the money supply, so therefore you can't get out of the debt. I personally sat in the Federal Reserve boardroom in Washington, D.C. and discussed this, and they said, yes, Mr. Dale, you're right. Individually, you might get out of debt, but collectively, we can never get out of debt.
Yep. I understand.
Well, if you can't ever get out of debt, then you're always in monetary servitude to them guys, because you've got to go to a banker to beg to get a loan, to get into any business or do any business or stay in any business, because it takes money to run a business.
I had a friend that acquired three-ring binders back in the 90s. He used to come to our Citizens for Legal Reform meetings from someone's estate who died. And these were the operations manuals for at least a Federal Reserve Bank. Maybe not the entire Federal Reserve. I don't recall if it was for the entire Federal Reserve or for at least one Federal Reserve banking system. You could go to the bank if you wanted to. You could see the current three-ring binders. They'd let you examine them for a half hour at a time. You couldn't take any paper. You couldn't make any notes. Couldn't make any copies. If you wanted to come back, they'd let you in 6 months or whatever. He had these copies, and one of the things he saw is that it was Federal Reserve policy to lend no money to alternative energy. If the banks were going to be making any loans to energy systems, this goes back, the document might have been produced in the 80s, I don't know. But if you wanted alternative energy, the banking system would not provide you with any funds. They'd back coal and petroleum and nuclear, and that's as far as the banks would go. That means they were controlling energy policy in the United States by virtue of depriving alternative energy like solar and wind and water power. They were depriving them of the funds they needed to really develop, and here we are.
Yeah, and they do the same thing. They tell me, and I haven't been in business any longer now for 30 years, but I have friends that are that say, you have to buy the fertilizer the way they want it and everything else, or they won't finance you. So they run it all. I mean, come on, just think about it. They create all the money. The Federal Reserve themselves say, and I have a personal letter from the FDIC that says, yes, banks can create money as investments and as loans. Now, normally they only invest in you know, some kind of government bond or, you know, somebody else's IOU, something like that, you know, a debt instrument of some sort. But that there's no rules that says they can't do it the other way. They just don't.
Yeah.
And then they create the money as loans to us, and then we have to sign promissory notes. And they don't even have to prove they made you a loan. And I had a court case, and I've been in one court case from 1983 to 1998, you know, more or less. It was basically over the same thing. And I can tell you stories longer than we got long time here, long, I can guarantee you.
We have about 2.5 minutes is what we have left right now, Byron. So one of the things...
If we would only...
Give us a summary and then tell us where folks can find you. You do your own radio program, and you've already mentioned wealthmoney.org. Was that the...
Yes, that's the best place to go. Okay. Or you can just type in Byron Dale. If you type in Byron Dale, I guarantee you my name will come up first thing, and it'll be all about me and where to get the website and all these kind of things, and then you can read from there. The radio programs are all on the that I do is all listed on the website there, which is probably the easiest place to get them. You can also go to the Constitution Club and get them. But, you know, what we got to do, and the only solution we can ever have, now this may not be the final solution, but this is the one that would get us out of the muck and where we could start operating and keep everything running, if the government would start creating the money right now and spending it in.
Now, the government would get the money? Rather than the Federal Reserve, and rather
and
than having it loaned into circulation by the Federal Reserve, you would have it spent into circulation by the national government, and the point would be we wouldn't have any interest obligations on the money that the government was producing and spending into circulation, rather as compared to the interest that's there on the Federal Reserve notes. Is that roughly
Absolutely.
The argument?
And you could also then eliminate a lot of the taxes. And that money should be spent mainly for things that benefit everybody, like the transportation system, where then you spend it in to build something that everybody has to have commerce. You cannot have commerce if you can't move the goods.
And
so
I
now
see that
they
you're involved
that,
in something called the American Transportation Act, and we don't have
yes.
time. We've got about 30 seconds left for all, so we can't get into that now, but perhaps we can have you back another time, and we can
you
talk
can,
about the American
in
Transportation
fact,
Act.
Tomorrow evening, I will be down there talking to the Minnesota legislature about that very concept, that act that would actually, we can also do this on a state level. You just got to do it a little bit different is all, but you can still do it.
All right, Byron, we have to thank you. We're out of time, so I've got to thank you for being on the program. I enjoyed it. Look forward to having you here again. I want to thank all of you folks for listening. I'll be back tomorrow with Melody Cedarstrom. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, Frank, the producer, and Byron Dale.
Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me.